Anantakoti Vaishnava Vindakijaya Samaveda Bhakta Vindakijaya Nittai Ho Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to C.C. Guru and Gauranga. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 14, Text 5. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Muktanam api siddhanam.
Muktanam api siddhanam.
Narayana parayana.
Narayana parayana.
Sudulabha prashantatma.
Sudulabha prashantatma.
Kotish api mahamune.
Kotish api mahamune.
Someone chant.
Muktanam api siddhanam.
Muktanam api
siddhanam.
Narayana parayana.
Sudurlabha prashantatma.
Sudurlabha prashantatma.
Kotishvapi mahamune.
Kotishvapi mahamune.
Muktanam api siddhanam.
Muktanam api siddhanam.
Narayana parayana.
Narayana parayana.
Sudurlabha
prashantatma.
Kotishvapi mahamune.
Kotishvapi mahamune.
Any ladies chant?
Muktanam api siddhanam.
Muktanam api siddhanam.
Narayana parayana.
Narayana parayana.
Sudurlabha prashantatma.
Sudurlabha prashantatma.
Kotishvapi mahamune.
Kotishvapi mahamune.
Muktanam.
Muktanam.
Of those who are liberated during this life, when attached to the bodily comforts of society, friendship, and love,
when attached to the bodily comforts of society, friendship, and love,
api,
api,
even,
even,
siddhanam,
siddhanam,
who are perfect,
who are perfect,
because they understand the insignificance of bodily comforts,
because they understand the insignificance of bodily comforts,
narayana parayana,
narayana parayana.
A person who has concluded that Narayana is the supreme. Sudulabha.
Very rarely found.
Prasanta.
Fully pacified.
Atma.
Atma.
Whose mind.
Kotishu.
Out of millions and trillions. Api.
Even.
Mahamune,
Mahamune,
O great sage. Translation, O great sage, among many millions who are liberated and perfect in knowledge and liberation, one may be a devotee of the Lord Narayana or Krishna. Such devotees who are very peaceful are extremely rare. So, it's a very long purport, and I'll just briefly just put it in context of the story, and then we'll comment on it after the purport. But the qualities of Dhritarasura were described. We've heard that story, and how much a devotee he was. So Maharaj Prickett is listening and he's raising an inquiry. How can that be possible that he's a devotee? Because a devotee is at the apex of spiritual evolution. And now he's actually describing that, how rare it is to become a devotee after many, many millions. And the word here said, koti min 10 million, millions and trillions. After millions of trillions who are liberated, so many people, to find someone who's a devotee is rare. How can this person be a devotee? And we discussed that yesterday. So understanding that, now we'll see how Prabhupada's purport elucidates that point. To try to listen carefully, sometimes it's difficult. This will be the test of your yogic abilities to actually concentrate on something without the mind fluctuating. And I'll ask questions. Bori Jampabu trained me in that way. Terrify the audience to get them to be concentrated. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives the following purport to this verse. Simply desiring mukti or liberation is insufficient. One must become factually liberated. When one understands the futility of the materialistic way of life, one becomes advanced in knowledge, and therefore he situates himself in the vanaprastha order, unattached to family, wife, and children. One should then further progress to the platform of sannyas, the actual renounced order, never to fall again and be afflicted by materialistic life. Even though one desires to be liberated, this does not mean he is liberated. Only rarely is someone liberated. Indeed, although many men take sannyas to become liberated, because of their imperfections, they again become attached to women, material activities, and social welfare, and so on. So Prabhupada saying, even jnana sannyas, such a millions of so difficult, it's so rare. Now the devotee is being placed above this. And how do you reconcile this with the fact that Dhritarasura, who's a demon, is at that platform? Prabhupada goes on, jnani, yogis, and karmis devoid of devotional service are called offenders. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Mayavadi Krishna Aparadi, one who thinks that everything is Maya instead of thinking that everything is Krishna is called an Aparadi, an offender. Now when I was studying this before, I saw I had notes in my book, and I particularly noted this next sentence. Although the Mayavadi impersonalists are offenders at the lotus feet of Krishna, they may nonetheless be counted among the siddhis, those who have realized the self. So maybe in New York language, you know, Mayavadis are no slouches. They may be considered nearer to spiritual perfection because at least they have realized what spiritual life is. This is going to be a very interesting point. That they're kind of close but going in the wrong way. It's better to be a little bit distant and going in the right way. That's us. We get a lot of credit just for our objective or goal. They may be, if such a person becomes Narayana Parayana, a devotee of Lord Narayan, he is better than a Jivan Mukti who is liberated or perfect. This requires higher intelligence. This term is so nice, Narayana Parayana, one who really loves God. Narayana Parasarve Nakutas Chanya Bibhyati Swagapavaga Narakeshu Apituyakta Darshana. One who is Narayana Parayana. There are two kinds of jnanis. One is inclined to devotional service, and the other to impersonal realization. So you can be a jnani inclined to devotional service. That's called jnana mishra bhakti. You work on your renunciation first so that you can focus on Krishna. There are people like this that are great mystics, and they are purifying themselves with their goal that eventually they'll be able to focus on Krishna without any distraction. So that's one type of jnani, and the other is the impersonalist. Impersonalists generally undergo great endeavor for no tangible benefit, and therefore it is said that they're husking paddy that has no grain. Stula tusha bhagatina. The other class of jnanis, whose jnan is mixed with bhakti, are also of two kinds. Those who are devoted to the so-called false form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and those who understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Satchit Ananda Vigraha, the actual spiritual form. So there's something called Panchaposhana, where you can worship a form of God to hopefully achieve in your own estimation something beyond God. And Prabhupada criticized this very, very heavily. In the purport in the Gita, Manmana Bhava Madmak Bhakto, the devotees were using Prabhupada didn't have his Gita published yet, so they were using the Gita translation, the verses of Dr. Radhakrishnan, who was the president of India and a great Sanskrit scholar. And he said, it's not to Krishna we have to surrender, but the unborn beginningless within Krishna. And then Prabhupada quoted from the Upanishads, Deha Dehi Nabedyo Yam Neshvare Vidyate Kuchit. In terms of the absolute truth, how can you distinguish between the Deha and the Dehi? The body and the possessor of the body. It's not to this we surrender, but what's beyond that. The Mayavadi devotees worship Narayan or Vishnu with the idea that Vishnu has accepted a form of Maya and that the ultimate truth is actually impersonal. It's hard to read this without kind of commenting. But it's just the defect of one defect of Mayavadi philosophy is everything's illusion. Right? So then you have to ask the question, what is the basis of illusion? If you say illusion, something has to be an illusion. So what is the basis of illusion? If everything's illusion, who is illusion? So the Mayavadis will say the jivas. But if the jiva is illusion, then how can it be the basis of illusion? So then they have to say Brahman. Right? The absolute reality is an illusion. But if the absolute reality is an illusion, it's not the absolute reality. So it really doesn't have a sound philosophical basis. The pure devotee, however, never thinks that Vishnu has accepted a body of Maya. Instead, he knows perfectly well that the original absolute truth is the Supreme Person. Such a devotee is actually situated in knowledge. He never merges in the Brahman effulgence, as stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.32. Okay, you want to shut the windows? Yeah. Okay. Thank you. So this is a famous verse by Queen Kunti's prayers. Yenye Ravindaksha Vamuktamanias Toyasta Bhavara Vishuddha Buddhya Aruya Katrena Param Padam Pata Patan Adur Nadita Yushmad Angraha. O Lord, the intelligence of those who think themselves liberated but have no devotion is impure. Even though they rise to the highest point of liberation by dint of severe penances and austerities, they are sure to fall down again into material existence, for they do not take shelter of your lotus feet. In the second canto of the Bhagavatam, when they have the 10 subject matters, the 9th subject matter is mukti. And then Sukadeva Goswami gives a definition of mukti. Muktir hitva yata rupam sarupena vivastita. That mukti is Mukti, Muktir Hidvayata, it's giving up the form. But Sarupena Vivasta, but situated in Sarup, your real form. It's not just becoming liberated from this form, it's actually being situated in a real form. And people who don't understand that, in the Bhagavatam it says their intelligence is not pure. Evidence of this same point is also given in Bhagavad Gita 9:11, where the Lord says, Avajananti mam mudha manusham tanum asritam param bhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. When rascals, mudhas, see that Krishna acts exactly like a human being, they deride the transcendental form of the Lord because they do not know the param bhavam, his transcendental form and activities. Just a comment. I would like to get, finish the purport, but the Lord's form, one argument that impersonalist philosophers give, that the Lord must be opposite to what's here. So if there's form, if in the material there's form, then the Lord must have no form. But I heard one argument that I like better. It says, really, what is the opposite of form? And he gave the example, what is the opposite of poor? Is it no money or a lot of money? So the opposite of form is a beautiful form, not no form. Just the opposite of poor is rich. It's not no money. And I also like when there was that debate between Hridayananda Maharaj and Professor Bharati, who was a Dutch impersonalist. This is about 40 years ago. And he really didn't like the devotees. And he looked at Hridayananda Maharaj with a kind of disgust and said, "You are a Vaishnava. You believe that God has form, and therefore you're limiting God." And Hridayananda Maharaj looked at him and said, actually speaking, he said, no. He said, we're Vaishnavas. We believe that God is pervading everywhere and he has form. He said, you deny the form of God, therefore you're limiting God. His transcendental form, such persons are further described in Bhagavad Gita 9:12 as follows. Mogasha moga karmano moga jnana vichetasa. Rakshi sim asarim chaiva prakritim mohinim shrita. Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demoniac and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruit of activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. Such persons do not know that Krishna's body is not material. There is no distinction between Krishna's body and his soul. But because less intelligent men see Krishna as a human being, they deride him. They cannot imagine how a person like Krishna can be the origin of everything. Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Such persons are described as Mogahasa, baffled in their hopes. Whatever they desire for the future will be baffled. Even if they apparently engage in devotional service, they are described as Mogahasa, because they ultimately desire to merge into the Brahman effulgence. So they can't imagine God to be a person. I heard it's really one powerful argument that how God is a person. It's very simple and rational. There's one Christian apologist, and he's probably the top rational defender of the existence of God in the world, in the Christian world, named Alvin Plantinga. And it was just a discussion, and it was like a pleasant discussion. And someone asked him, is God a person? And his answer was just so sweet and simple. He said, God is not less than a person. So to deny that is limiting God. And I just always remember when I first got the Krishna book in the university in the real early 70s. My college roommate became a devotee and he brought back the Krishna book, and I was studying philosophy at the time and I was reading the Krishna book. And I think I was reading the prayers of the demigods. And it's describing how Krishna is God, you know, his immanence, his majesty. And it's describing that, but at the same time, he has this beautiful, sweet family with relationships and love and mother and father, different activities that are so beautiful. And then I would just, in the philosophy class, they gave the definition of God. And the definition of God is that being of which no greater can be conceived. And then I thought about it. I said, it must be Krishna. Because how can there be something greater? Jai remembers we had that question and answer in Kali. And the guy asked the question. We had a big festival there, and I was sitting under the tree, questions and answers. And someone asked the question, you know, but I believe that God, you know, is what did he say? Remember, Jai? Well, energy. And I say, well, you know, the definition of God, of that being of which no greater can be conceived. I believe God is an energy who can talk. There's something greater than just a homogeneous mass of energy. It's reasonable. Actually, the conception of Krishna is very reasonable. The conception of God as a person is reasonable. The existence of God is reasonable. Those who aspire to be elevated to the heavenly planets by devotional service will also be frustrated because this is not the actual, not the result of devotional service. Just so many points come to mind. Bhakti is independent of any process. No process is independent of bhakti. Because to achieve success in any process, there has to be an element of mercy. And mercy comes from worship. So impersonalists also worship. They need something more than their own effort. So the process of Gyan is not independent of bhakti. However, they are also given a chance to engage in devotional service and be purified, as stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.17. Srinvata Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hidyantasto Yabhadrani Vidanoti Saritsatam. Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma in everyone's heart and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who relishes his message, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. So this process of bhakti, God becomes pleased and he blesses you. And he blesses you with something that is far beyond what you can achieve by your effort. And you know, this is actually a success in preaching. It's a success in management. When devotees get together and glorify Krishna and develop the proper relationships, when they actually can make a team that has trust materially and spiritually, and they can work together, then Krishna becomes pleased. That's what this verse says. He's the benefactor. And then he does the work for us. That's the secret to success. Unless the dirt within the core of one's heart is cleansed away, one cannot become a pure devotee. Therefore, the word sadulabha, very rarely found, is used in this verse. Not only among hundreds and thousands, but among millions of perfectly liberated souls, a pure devotee is hardly ever found. Therefore, the word kotish api are used herein. Srila Madhvacharya gives the following quotation from the Tantra Bhagavata. There are 90 million demigods and 70 million sages. who are called Narayanayana, devotees of Lord Narayan. Among them, very few are called Narayana Parayana. You may be a devotee, but to be Narayana Parayana, to have that love. Now, almost time is up, but Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Taksuim Mulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah. Okay, let's just try to put this, you know, in just further context. And we were talking about this yesterday. What's really great is the devotees' desire to understand things clearly. And that's called thoughtfulness. And the devotees' faith in guru and sadhu. And when you have that combination of faithfulness and thoughtfulness, when you hear something that belies your rationale, your conscience, what you think is in Shastra, etc., you don't reject it and you don't accept it. You try to understand it. Don't accept it, you don't reject it. Well, you accept it in a way, but you don't accept your understanding of it that belies your conscience, that belies. But you try to understand it. And that's very, very powerful. Because in one sense, we see ourselves less clearly than anybody else, in a sense. Because when we're trying to decipher something, we have our attachments connected to those points where another person may not, and especially guru. So he's trying to understand it more deeply and trying to reconcile this point of this very, very high thing that he understands. He understands this from Shastra. It's so high to be Narayana Parayana. And I believe that verse, what is it? Narayana Parayana. What is that? What's that? Narayana Prasarve Nakuchas Pinyabib Swaga Pavaga Narakeshu. It's so rare. And that verse is about Vritrasura. There's a verse that he is Narayana Parayana. This is above millions of devotees. One who actually develops that love, he's above it. And how is he going to be described in the next verse? Infamous sinful demon, always engaged in giving troubles and anxiety to others. How can such a demon become so greatly Krishna conscious? And this dichotomy is very, very subtle. I heard one great acharya describe it as the difference between one's ordinary dealings and the inspired side. And that when you look at a Vaishnava, you look more at the inspired side rather than just the ordinary dealings. Of course, you don't neglect the ordinary dealings, but as we were mentioning yesterday, there's not an absolute correlation between so many wonderful qualities and bhakti, because it's a different sukriti. For example, renunciation. Look at Narada Muni. Narada Muni was in the Himalayas, and you know, he had got saksha darshan, he had seen God, and then Narayan disappeared, and then he tried again to see him with the same process, and he couldn't see him, and he couldn't understand, because I did the same thing, because it's not a mechanical process. It's not just your chanting, it is the voice in your chanting that God hears. He doesn't hear just your syllables, he hears the voice in your chanting. And when God sees you, when we take darshan before the deities, he doesn't just see your body, he sees your heart. That's why when the wives of the Brahmins came to Krishna, and Krishna, what did he see? Takta sarva asha. He gave up all hope for anything else. So Krishna sees this, your heart is something very deep. So take Narada Muni. He's sitting and he's thinking, why can't I achieve this? I'm doing the same process, the same meditation, and then there's an Akashvani, there's a voice from the sky, and what does the voice from the sky say? It says you have a material taint and you're not complete in service. So what's they're connected. What's the material taint? He had an attachment. What was his attachment? His attachment was to the Himalayas. His attachment was to peacefulness. The Himalayas are so peaceful. But that's still an attachment. That's why it's not pure goodness. Why the mode of goodness in the material world is not pure, because you become attached to it. An attachment means that it's mixed with some passion. It's not pure goodness. It's not the highest consciousness. The highest consciousness is when you just want to serve Krishna. And you're not attached to anything else. Anya bilashita shunyam. There's no other desires. Anukulyena Krishna anu shilanam bhakta uttama. Your only desire is that Krishna should be pleased. So it said, and the second taint is that he was not complete in service. And when you say you're not complete in service, it doesn't just mean the activity of service. It means the consciousness of service. And to get the consciousness of service, you have to actually have to do service. He wasn't complete. So there's a dichotomy, and therefore bhakti sukriti. We mentioned it's reconciled because yesterday I needed that reference, and he quoted from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. What was the exact English translation of that verse? The devotees of Lord Chaitanya, they're very renounced. That's their ornament. The ornament is their renunciation. But the renunciation that they have, it comes from that surrender. And therefore, in devotional service, when you actually surrender to Guru and Krishna, when you give everything to Krishna, you get a lot of credit beyond your external, incidental behavior. Like Prabhupada in the Purport said, the Mayavadis are very close. He was mentioning that. He said they're very, very close. I think he said they may be considered nearer to spiritual perfection because they realize what spiritual life has. They're very close, but they're in the wrong direction. In terms of purity, they may be very detached from the body, etc. But the devotee, he's in the right direction. And he gets credit for that. I heard one brilliant example given of if you have someone who's jumping off a building, right? In New York, he'd be on the building, and then he's jumping. As he's going up, people say what? He's falling. Why? Because they see the result. So once one actually surrenders to Krishna deep in their hearts, Shipram Bhavati Dharmatma, very quickly they will become purified. So you actually see the result of that. So there's not this absolute correlation. And bhakti sukriti, it has so much credit that you actually come to that point, and therefore how to see people in that way. When you actually see their heart and see their surrender to Krishna, even if there are incidental actions and behavior that are not pleasing to you or even affect you in a detrimental way, you still appreciate. You see their heart, and you see where they're going, and you know how they'll be purified. So here, therefore, you can't really judge a person incidentally, because people have different karma. So they may have that core surrender to Krishna in their hearts, and then at a particular time in their life, Krishna is purifying them by letting them have the fruits of some past reactions that may be distracting them. But you can't judge them the same. Even if they've left and are gone. There's one purport in the Bhagavatam where it describes the term called rasa graha, that a devotee may be doing the exact same thing as a materialist, but you can't judge him as a materialist, because within his heart, nehabhika manasho sti pratyavayo navidyate swapam apyasyadam, within his heart he has that taste is somehow there. So there's so a devotee is looked at a very internal platform. If he has that core basis, Brahmatirtha Prabhu, perfect questions, perfect answers. He said the first verse that Prabhupada quoted to him and the last verse that Prabhupada quoted to him was Api Chet Siddharacharo Bhajate Mamananyabhak Sadureva Samantavya, that even if someone makes a bad mistake, if he's situated in devotion, Sadur Eva Samantavya, he's considered a sadhu. Whether you are intimate with him is another thing, but he's considered a sadhu. Mantavya, he's seen in that way because of his surrender. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he explains in terms of that verse that, you know, sometimes the devotional activities and our material nature are parallel. Because we eat and we sleep and we're married, we have children. There's so many things that we come down to the material platform, and in our service, sometimes someone may be caught in that nature and go beyond what his dharma is. But still, you see. And I know also Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I think it's in Bhakti Lok, and he discusses Grihastha life. And especially if you look at it 500 years ago, you know, where everybody outside was, whether they're devotees or not devotees, they had a certain type of religious activities. He said the main qualification is a person's sincere objective or goal. That's the main thing. He has the proper goal, the proper objective in his heart. So he's, and then we'll hear the story of Chitraketu. What's the story of Chitraketu? That he offended Parvati and he was cursed. And how did he accept his curse? How did great devotees accept the curse? Marge Prickett said, Sadhu Mane, that is good. Why is it good? For three reasons. I'll be able to purify myself from the reaction to the offense I've committed. It'll help me become detached from the world. And the offense I committed will not go to my legacy, my family. So Sadhu Mane, I accept it. I accept it. And same thing with Chitraketu. He accepted it. But somehow there was some reaction he had to face that was an external thing that manifested in a particular way, manifested in a particular life. Look at the story of Jada Bhart. He was a great devotee, a Bhart Maharaj. And then he made some mistake, and then he suffered that mistake. But that karma was so separate from his core being in devotion, which never diminishes, which stays within the heart. So we have to be very, very careful to have a vision of people's sincerity and their surrender in spiritual life, and not just judge them externally by their karma and the struggles and the difficulties they have, and how their false ego conflicts with our false ego. So anyway, this is going to be revealed. Any questions? Okay, Adi, you have any question? Yeah. Okay, question? Yeah, be sure.
How do you reconcile going through karmic reactions at the same time we also have our own standards that we need to uphold, especially as preachers? Also, there comes a point where there is a responsibility to be at a certain level of devotion. Or not devotion, but a certain level of practice, especially as a disciple or as a leader, where there's some certain behavior that is required. And so how would you reconcile that when there may be some karmic suffering?
Yeah, I can see that, yeah. First of all, we're talking about judging others. Now, even in terms of ourselves, there's verses in the Bhagavatam that say, okay, you make mistakes. If you're sincere, right, then you just become humble. You don't have to become overridden with guilt. If your goal is devotional service, yeah, we're not up to the standard yet. That's okay. But when we look at other people, we have to be very, very careful. I think there's the story in Dhruva Maharaj, where someone, I forgot the story, I think it was Dhruva Maharaj's brother, it mentioned this, the thing that you can be held responsible if you treat someone wrong, and then he becomes a pure devotee. That would be connected. If you treat someone badly, you may get the offense of that person when he achieves maturity in his spiritual life. So we have to be careful. But yes, we set certain standards, we maintain certain standards, we preach certain standards, but we don't condemn people, if they're sincere, because sincere people may sometimes falter, because it's very, very powerful. So here's the case. Vitrasura. Okay, it's time for the class, so...
Yeah.